Yes. Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Peter Augustin, and you are tuned to my new and ongoing podcast. It's called The House List, just like The Guest List. So when you put someone on The House List, it's just like The Guest List. I just marked your name off, and you're in it with me, your host, Peter Augustin. Yes. And my very special guest today, Frankie Rose, in the place. We had a great conversation. I've known her for a while, so it was good to catch up. I hadn't seen her in a while, and she has a brand new album coming out on Slumberland Records August 11th called Cage Tropical. The song at the beginning of the podcast is called Trouble, and that's off of that record too. I listened to the album. It's great. It's awesome. And we talk about it. So we talk about a lot of stuff. It's quite cool. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. If this is your very first time listening and checking out The House List, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You can find us really quickly. I'm going to break it all down and get this out of the way. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, and now on YouTube as well. So if you prefer to listen to things on YouTube, if that's your medium, then search The House List Podcast, all one word, and you'll find it there. I just put it up. We uploaded every single past episode. This is episode 41, so the previous 40 are all up there. So some really great conversations that I think you should check out with some people that you probably would love to hear from. I'd like to think so. So, yes, here we are. I'm in New York right now. I'm in Brooklyn. I'm recording this intro, but I'm right about to leave to go to California for some work. I got some shows with some bands that I work with, but also to record some podcasts while I'm out there too, which I'm really looking forward to. It should be a fun trip. And very much a DIY operation, bouncing from place to place, trying to record these compelling chit-chats with people. So look out for that. Hopefully you had a safe and sound 4th of July weekend. I'm recording this right before the festivities, and it's extremely quiet and calm, serene in New York City right now, which I like quite a bit. It helps me think. And now we can nestle in to my chat with the one and only Frankie Rose. And yeah, I think it was awesome, and it was great to talk to her. She's really cool, very great production mind too, beyond the stuff that you may know of her from her solo records, her first band kind of under her own name, Frankie Rose and the Outs. But of course, some of you may know her from her tenure playing in the Vivian Girls and Crystal Stilts, the Dum Dum Girls as well. So yeah, we kind of like chat about a little bit of all of that stuff. And she's got a tour that kicks off on the day of the album release in Philadelphia, Johnny Brenda's, on August 11th, the same day the record comes out. You can see all those dates at frankierose.info. So yeah, and what I didn't realize too is that she actually has a podcast in the works coming up that you should check out for too, called Weird Night with Juan and Frankie. It's about like paranormal activity and stuff like that. So if you're interested in that kind of subject like I am, then definitely look out for that. It's going to be pretty cool. So we kind of get into that. I reveal some personal stories about my own experience, both with seeing a UFO and some terrible Reiki experiences I've had. So yeah, I don't know. Somehow I started opening up in a weird way. But it should be pretty good. So anyway, listen, check this out. My combo with the one and only Frankie Rose. Only here on The House List. Where are you from exactly?
Yeah, I'm from like 30 minutes south of LA. Okay. But I left when I was 16.
And so you came here?
No, I was in San Francisco for like 9 or 10 years, and then now here.
Were you doing, was that because of music, or was it just because of, like, at 16, were you moving around or what?
Oh, yeah. And I thought that, I mean, I knew I wanted to come to New York, but I was very impressed with San Francisco at 16. It felt like a close New York or something.
So. Yeah, I mean, I remember. So I moved to Oregon, Portland, Oregon, in 1999, and I remember the first time I went to San Francisco was like probably it was 1999, I think, and I moved across country because I'm from Virginia originally, and I drove across country with a buddy of mine that was moving to Missoula. And he had come to visit me in Portland, and we were like drinking beer and like smoking weed and like eating pizza, and like we're like, let's go to San Francisco. So we, I really regret some of these decisions that we made back then because I was like 18 years old, but we just got in the car like at 11 o'clock and drove from Portland to San Francisco. And that was like my first time there. And it was like just a pretty magical kind of experience. I remember we like slept on the beach and shit. And like,
it was magical then.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an amazing place then.
Were you there at, around that time?
Yeah, I was. Cool. Like 97, 90. Wow. Yeah. Until, yeah, I mean, I guess 9 or 10 years later. So, I mean, I was there through both, well, yeah, the first dot-com boom. And then there was like a second one.
Yeah.
Including displacement to Oakland.
So you started living in San Francisco and then moved to Oakland during that time?
At some point, but I went back and forth. Right. But there was, you know, at one point during the first dot-com, everyone was just getting kicked out of their apartments. I mean, now it's just completely gentrified, and that's all it is now.
I know. It's crazy.
Place for software engineers to live. So
yeah, I'm trying. I have a band that's playing at the Elbow Room in the beginning of July, and I'm just trying to find. They've never played. They're like a Hungarian band, so they've never played in San Francisco ever, and I'm trying to find like a local, some kind of local openers, too.
It's hard.
San Francisco, it's nearly impossible.
Because everyone moved to L.A. or New York.
Right.
It's not, I know almost nobody that lives there anymore. And the artists that are there now are just constantly complaining.
Were you doing music there, though? Like
when That's where I started playing music, yeah. I was just in punk bands. I must have been started when I was like 23 or 24, cool. Something like that. So.
Did you do film stuff, too?
I went, my one attempt at college, which I quickly realized I didn't have enough money to do it, but I did a semester of art school at the San Francisco Art Institute, and I did do a lot of film, actually. I did a course with George Kuchar, who's, I don't know if you know who he is, he's amazing. It was like a thing that, having a class with that man was like very, and left a mark on me, because his whole thing was...
What was the emphasis in the class?
Oh, well, he's sort of like the father of, like John Waters, kind of. Almost ripped him off. I don't want to say that. He pays homage, is that the word?
Yeah.
homage to George Kuchar and sort of everything he does. But he was the first kind of guy to be like, anything goes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna let the camera roll, and like everything that happens on there is fine and interesting. And so when you're a young artist or a person that makes things, to have somebody like that tell you that everything you do is okay,
that's
there's
big.
No rules, that's an amazing message.
Right.
Which stuck with me forever.
Were you shooting? Did you have like a Super 8 camera and stuff too?
I did, yeah. I feel like I made some crappy little films. I'm no filmmaker. I mean, I think something that just like piqued my interest, but...
Of course. And San Francisco at that time too had a lot of really great like experimental film stuff going on, for sure. I remember that. Because I went to film school too.
At
the Northwest Film Center in Portland. That's actually the reason why I went there. So I remember this, especially on the West Coast, really, like, Portland and San Francisco had a great, I feel like, independent film sort of kinship in these, like, kind of, sort of, you know, the mid to late 90s, you know, just alternative and experimental film, and Super 8 was such a big part of that, too, shooting on that, because it's just economical, too, and, yeah, because I think somewhere along the way, I saw that you were... that you did film, and I know that even this record too has some tertiary like inspiration from some films and some the Italian movie, which I regretfully haven't seen, which I know I was talking to my buddy Ryan about this before I got here too, which is a classic. You know what I'm talking about? It starts with an S.
Oh, like Suspiria?
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I've slept on that too. So, but I know that that's like, it sort of informed some of the music making for the record.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, didn't Goblin do the soundtrack for that? I'm pretty sure they did.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I love
Yeah,
that
Italian
stuff.
Film, yeah. Goblin did a lot of great Italian scores and soundtracks, yeah.
I mean, I love all that stuff. I love John Carpenter soundtracks. I think are amazing.
Of course.
Tangerine Dream, obviously.
Yeah. stuff. Have you ever, nice. Did you, I saw them in New York once. Did you ever see it, have a chance to even play? It's pretty amazing.
Goblin?
No, it was Tangerine Dream did this thing like, a couple years ago.
No.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, yeah, I mean, so how do you transition out of San Francisco? Or what, like, was it just a point where it was time to get serious with music stuff? Or
no, I was never serious about music. I mean, I just really was in punk bands, and I was happy to be there, and I never thought that any kind of money or... I never thought anything about it. I mean, it was my, like, purely joy for me. But I had to get out of San Francisco because I was a bike messenger, and I'd been a bike messenger for, I don't know, like 7 years or something. And I was like, I'm going to be a 40-year-old bike messenger if I stay here. Like, I had a
They got some of those there.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I mean, there was no reason for me not to do that because I had a great job by the time I left where I barely had to move at all. I was like a legal messenger. Not the whole time. I was I was just running packages everywhere for many years, but later I got a process server's license, so I was doing legal couriering. And so you make a lot of money doing a lot less.
Yeah, it's documents and stuff, right?
Yeah. And race into the courthouse like before it closes to stamp something. So, it was nice. It was the best job I ever had, I'm telling you. You have no boss. I made really great money, but...
So you're just like sort of on call and people are like, I need you to pick this thing up.
Mm-hmm. And then like in the off time, if you don't have anything, I mean, San Francisco is your office. I was we'd pal around with everybody. We'd like go to museums or like anything that was break into pools. Like, and then if you got a call, you just jump on your bike and be gone. You know, go pick something up. It was really fun.
Yeah.
But I definitely, I mean, it's also, it's a weird scene though. I mean, it's like, it's tragic. It's also very tragic.
The terminal messengers or something?
Terminal messengers. I mean, there's a lot of addiction. There's a lot of people getting hit by cars. It's just, it's kind of dark. It's really dark.
Did you ever get hit?
Twice.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Did you hit the ground?
Oh, yeah. One time I got taken to the hospital in an ambulance. But I didn't break anything. I just had severe bruising. And it was not so crazy. It was kind of my fault, too, so.
because that, I mean, that obviously, that's why I can't ride a bike in New York at all. Like, I can't, I'm deathly afraid of, and I know I sound like a total wuss by saying that, but I've known a couple people that got hit in New York.
Yeah.
It's like, that shit is fucking terrifying, you know?
I know. Yeah, no, I had to get out of there. I mean, or I just would have done that forever.
Were you, like, going to shows, too? So you were kind of... You were playing some shows?
Yeah, I was playing shows, and I had, like, an awesome band that was sort of like a proto-Grass Widow.
Sweet.
I don't know if you know those
girls.
Yes,
of course.
But,
I do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, essentially, I played with all of them except for Lily.
Oh, really?
And, Lily was the... she took my place as the drummer.
Oh, interesting.
And then it became Grass Widow after I left.
What was it called before that?
I can't tell you. It's too embarrassing.
Okay, that's fine.
It's not a cool name.
No, that's okay. Grass Widow, of course, I remember from their days at Panache when I was working at Panache, too. And they were definitely, like, early on the roster because Michelle, you know, really formed the agency in San Francisco. It was, like, the era of, like, the Coach Whips and stuff like that.
I remember.
Did you play with the Coach Whips at all?
I don't think I ever played with the Coach Whips, but fun fact... I worked with one of them at Bike Messengering, John Harlow, who's like still one of my really good friends.
Cool.
I love John. So yeah, I mean, and actually, Gianni Dwyer, I wasn't friends with him, but he would messenger sometimes too. And we'd be like in line at court together, you know?
That's
funny.
Yeah.
I mean,
that is funny. I mean, I guess that makes
punks, you know?
Totally. I mean, that makes sense. Job wise, you know, it sounds like, I mean, it's extremely flexible and like, obviously, when the courts close and the offices close, then you don't have to work anymore.
Yeah.
You know, right?
It was great.
Yeah, that's what's up. I dig that. So then you went back to LA or something? Or?
Oh, no. Ugh, no. I don't know. I went straight here. I didn't like LA. I don't ask me why I tried to move back there recently. I think I went to... I visited New York with a friend, and I was like, whoa, this is amazing, you know.
Had you gotten to the point of, like, wanting to play music there, too? Or is this just... music was just still kind of like a side thing?
It was the thing that made me the most happy that was just, for fun. And I definitely wanted to play when I got here to New York. And I didn't really know anyone to play with, so that took a while.
Did you know anyone at all?
Yeah, I did. I did, because I was in this bike club called the Black Label Bike Club.
Oh, nice. Okay.
They do this thing called Bike Kill every year. It's their sort of I'm friends with some of them still, but not really around that anymore. But it still exists. Oh yeah. And they had like a house in Bed-Stuy, and I moved in there. Whoa. So it was like a clubhouse.
Right.
It was fun.
Do you remember Bikes in the Kitchen? This thing. It was like these dudes that were like put on shows. It was like a DIY Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Early
I do remember
like
that.
Early sort of scene where.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah, that's interesting, like the whole bike sort of proto-punk bike kind of culture and stuff.
Yeah,
too.
Now I don't know what it is.
I don't know at all what it is.
It's just like everyone has a track bike and everyone.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's not the way it used to be.
So interesting. So that was like your entryway into like settling in New York.
Mm-hmm. It was. It really was.
That's wild. Well, yeah. So, what year is this? What year are we talking? So I can get some true context, because obviously things have changed a lot.
I must have been 26 or just turned 26. I think so. Uh-huh. I mean, that's how long ago was that? I'm not trying to put you on blast anyway. It was a while ago.
Yeah. So how long until? Because obviously people like associate you with a lot of the bands that you were kind of. You were a part of several like ensembles or outfits mm-hmm. or groups and stuff like that. Was Vivian Girls the first thing that like you had kind of fallen into as far as like a normal kind of regular band type situation?
Yeah. I later moved into this kind of, I guess you would call it a punk house. I mean, it was pretty much, there was like beer cans in the shower. Definitely. It was called The Orphanage. It was in Greenpoint, where it is now Maha Rose, the Reiki studio.
Oh, wow.
My loft where I slept is still there. It's funny. Go in there and, you know, not a punk house anymore.
Have you been inside?
Yeah,
have you done Reiki there?
No, I don't. Mm-mm. No.
Do you not mess with that stuff?
I mean, I would. I don't know. I'm open.
Someone did it to me when I lived in California. I lived in Humboldt for like 5 years, and that's where I finished school. This guy, like, this sort of, like, fake, like, shaman dude, ooh. Like, did it to me. Like, this was, like, in 2000 or 2001. So it wasn't as popular as it is now, right. Obviously, or widely known, or I don't know. And I remember I, like, sat in this chair, like, in a wooden chair or something like this, like, in the middle of the room. And he, like, you know, did his whole... I've never done it since, because I felt so... kind of manipulated and taken advantage of.
Oh, so it didn't work?
No, it worked. It worked. Yeah, it worked. No, but he was like, you know, doing this and like pulling all this energy out of my arms and shit like that. And I did it more than once with this dude, because he would come over. And I know it sounds kind of weirdly like homoerotic or something like that, but it was very like, I think he went around to people's houses and did this, you know.
Okay.
And, but then I started to feel like he was, like, sort of using, like, taking my energy and using
stealing.
It for himself.
He was stealing your energy.
He was, because I started feeling, like, gross afterwards. Like, not that he ever physically touched me, because, I mean, obviously that's not what it is. This is, like, making it. Anyway. That's a trip. Yeah, well, things certainly change.
Oh, they just sure do in New York. I mean, I love that neighborhood. But that's how I met. I met Cassie. Me and Cassie started playing together. So we were Vivian Girls at first for a while. And then...
Just the two of you?
Well, like, and we knew we wanted a bass player. Right. So, yeah, okay. Like, a, I don't know, 4 months or something.
Yeah.
And then brought Katie on, who was Cassie's friend. And, yeah, that's...
Cool.
We recorded the first single in The Orphanage. Played drums on, like, I think I just had, like, a snare and, like, a tom and...
Nice.
You know, and then Woods just put it out, and that was that. That was sort of...
Yeah. And just, what, was like on a 4-track or something like that? Or you had
I think it was just on a computer.
Nice.
It was just like on a crappy... It might have even been GarageBand. It was just so... Yeah. Actual lo-fi.
Yeah,
now.
For sure. Yeah.
What would be known lo-fi.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, because then that... Obviously that... Even doing a record on that label, too, probably starts to open things up a little bit more as far
definitely.
As that group. Because you did the... you guys all were, the first album was, you were on the album too, right?
Yeah. That's
just the one, or how many records did you guys do?
I did the first record.
Right. What was that experience like?
Fine. I mean, we did everything. I mean, to me, and I listen to it now and it sounds like it, but we recorded the whole thing in, I think, like a week.
Oh, cool.
Because I think our budget was $800 for it.
Sweet.
So we worked with my friend Jeremy Scott, and we just did it really fast. And
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's the way it should be. So when you were doing your, I mean, the outs would be like the following thing right after that, right? Or was that still like years to come?
Then I was in Crystal Stilts, and I did I did like 1 7-inch with them. We recorded that with Gary Olson, who's still recording. He's out in Ditmas Park, and that was quite nice. And yeah, and did some touring with them.
So you were just, you just kind of were falling into these different scenes, right? Different bands. Yeah.
And it was funny because for some reason, I mean, I don't know, Vivian Girls and Crystal Stilts, just they got locked together in people's minds.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But there was no, the only reason why, was the two wouldn't know each other, you know what I mean? They just shared me as a drummer. So to this day, I'm still confused because musically, in my mind, they're nothing alike.
But, no, not at all.
So.
Yeah, but they shared maybe a label, right? Or Woods this do both? No.
No, I mean, I think, no, Woods, oh, yes, Woods this did do, he reissued the EP, but like much later.
They also obviously shared a booking agent, too. So
wait.
With Chavez.
Oh, right.
So I think there's obviously some...
That was the same. That was all happening at the same time.
Right, right. Like, so, yeah, you end up kind of... That's interesting, yeah, how it sort of inadvertently there's some sort of scene that gets created that way, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It was also just really unfortunate because I couldn't do both. There was no possible way for me to do both. Yeah.
Would you have liked to have?
No, I mean, I didn't particularly get along with Vivian Girls. That's no lie at this point. It's ancient history now, but
yeah, that's all good.
So I ended up just staying in Crystal Stilts, which was fun. It was really easy and fun, and
so that's just like another, like just for a year or so too, right? Like before.
Yeah, a year, and then I was in, and then I'm trying to remember exactly the order that this happened. I think by that time I had recorded my first single.
Uh-huh. Is this Girlfriend Island or no?
No, this was like a record called The Only One that I don't even know. I have one somewhere. It's kind of long forgotten. But Gary Olson did that too, the same guy that did Crystal Stilts.
Right.
And Slumberland put it out, and I think that's when I joined Dum Dum Girls.
Yeah. Yeah, because that, again, too, it's just interesting to me, like, not to make you, sort of drag you through your history.
No,
like
it's good because I'm forgetting it.
Oh, good.
So that's good to remember it.
Yeah. No, and I love talking about that stuff. Sometimes, like, you know, your typical interview, too, can be a little, like, canned in that, like, trying to talk about every record that you've ever done, too. But I do think, one, it's sort of indicative of a certain period of time in New York, too, which is kind of also gone past in a way with the passage of time. And that that you were, you know, played this role because you were drumming in all these things too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that you sort of played this role in all these like pretty different bands, you know, that definitely had like different personalities, different kinds of people, and different styles of shows and kinds of fans, and like the venues you play might be the only thing you really kind of have in common, you know. So I think it's kind of cool and interesting because because it's been a while since you've been a part of someone else's group now. It's been years, right?
Yeah, years now.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting how that's, I guess, does that even inform anything that you've done, that you do now in a contemporary sense? Because you don't play, do you play drums in the studio on your new shit? Or is it like, you haven't played drums in a band or recorded drums in a long time, right?
You know what's funny is that the way when people ask me about like what do I play, I used to actually be good at drums. I think I was a good drummer.
For sure.
Now I haven't played in so long that I think that I'm sort of just not super great at any instrument.
Okay.
Like I can just barely get away with what I get away with. And I don't know. I don't always play things on my recording. In fact, my recordings, I'll make the demos, and then if I want something to sound tight and right, I'll like bring somebody else, right, like session people in. Because sure, to me, it's about like the outcome. Like, I don't need to be playing on this stuff. And some of it, like some of the guitar leads and things, like I'm very particular about, so I'll do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, I'm sort of a master of none.
Yeah, but I mean, you can, I mean, that's sure, that's one way to look at it, you know. But at the same time, even with this new record, if you're, I mean, you're writing the music, mm-hmm, you know, and you're composing, you're orchestrating like the mm-hmm, one, the sessions too, mm-hmm. So I mean, if anything, you've proven to be like a very proficient producer, you know, like,
yeah. I think that if I had to say what my talent was with music, it would be having a vision. Like having, right, I'm capable of having vision about what I want to do.
Have you ever produced anyone's album? Like,
no, but I'd really love to. I don't know why no one ever asked me.
Yeah, because even, I mean, listening to the new one, which I really like a lot, and I've, mm-hmm, had a chance to like sit with it for a couple of days and go on walks with it, which is really important for me. And even Interstellar, which for me was like a really impactful album, like I was really in love with that album. And but this new one too, it's very well produced, you know, in a way where it's not like overproduced, it's not underproduced. I mean, those are kind of like generic terms, but mm-hmm, the way it's composed is really great. So if to be able to apply that to someone besides yourself, you open yourself up and with so much other possibilities.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Look at, like, you know, Todd Rundgren is like probably an interesting example of that, because he, you know, is a really proficient, you know, had a very prolific career just himself, but like produced all of these really random things like the New York Dolls and fucking Meatloaf and the band and shit, and they're all like totally different, but whereas his music is its own kind of entity. It would be kind of cool if, you know, in the future, if someone can take that. Because they might not necessarily realize that the way that you sort of compose the album and bring people in, and you kind of direct them what to do, obviously, mm-hmm, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Because usually it's like a band setting where it's like the people you see on stage, the band, like, say, a Vivian Girls or any kind of traditional, mm-hmm, four-piece rock band, it's like, they go to the studio and they do their parts and then they replay their parts on stage, and that's totally fine. And I mean, that's a very traditional formula. It works, but yeah, not to go like totally tangential with it, but yeah, because I think this new record is dope. I mean, it actually reminds me a lot. Can I tell you all the things it reminded me of?
Please, because I don't know what it is. I mean, I could tell you what I don't have any frames of reference for it. I just have like this sort of file of sounds that I like,
right,
and like music that I like that comes out when I make something, but I have no idea what it sounds like.
Right. Well, I was definitely felt like it has some like Prince element, some, yeah, Prince vibe, like Kraftwerk, like kind of thing. New, like the New Order album Republic, which is like one of my favorite albums. It was like,
cool,
from '93, you know, which is their more like kind of synth and drum machine, like, and I mean, all their shit was, but it's their 90s kind of like more raved out version. Not that your shit is like that, but and even like Tears for Fears and stuff like that. So it has this kind of a lot of that kind of emotive song structure,
mm-hmm,
but there's obviously a lot of like synth and MIDI stuff too that's happening, right?
Oh, yeah,
yeah, which is dope. Like, I like that aspect of it because I couldn't really, my thing is I wouldn't be able to find any kind of contemporary comparisons just because I'm not that completely immersed in, like, I can't be like, yeah, it's kind of like Washed Out's album, you know, whatever, which I wouldn't want to do.
I think that's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, cool.
Because I think, I mean, if it sounds anything, if it sounds like anything original, that's nice. I mean, I wanted,
yeah,
to,
sure,
evoke feelings of almost all those bands that you mentioned. Actually,
right,
all of them. I love all of the bands you just mentioned. But not directly be like, I'm lifting these things where it's so obvious, you know?
Yeah, no, I didn't get that sense. It's just, you know, when you listen to something for the first time, too, it's the feelings that evoke from, you know, the first listen to music, you just, you can't control what your brain starts reacting to and right. what it brings you to,
right.
what it reminds you of. And not that it's, for me, it's more like the kind of emotion it reminds you of, too. So
good.
Yeah.
That's, it's not necessarily, I think, what's yeah. important to me.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. It's not like, oh, this sounds like this song that I'm very familiar with. It's more
good.
Like
the
vibe.
I wouldn't want it. The vibe, the feeling, the, I want it to bring back that stuff. I do. That's really important to me. But yeah, right. that's great. I love it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because making the record was obviously like, was different than the previous ones.
For oh my you, God, right? this one was crazy. Yeah.
So it was like
this
kind
one
of
was
like,
crazy because after the last one, I essentially was put in album jail.
What do you mean?
I mean, I think that it's a term that filmmakers use, mm-hmm. like when they make a movie and it kind of tanks.
Uh-huh.
And then if you're a director and it tanks, then you're put in film jail or.
Do you feel like, was that like a self-imposed
No,
exile?
I mean, I didn't have anyone knocking on my door. I think it's really hard now anyway, but I didn't have anyone
Definitely.
Knocking down my door saying, do you want all this money to make a new record?
Right.
So, I mean, I also wasn't approaching anyone to do that, but it was very clear to me that I was going to have to make the record first and then chop it around.
Right.
And...
Yeah, which it's kind of like takes you back to just the very beginning where you don't have resources really to speak of besides whatever you can do with your bare hands and the equipment that you have, right?
Like, if you only knew, like,
right.
because what how this record got made, it's like, it's an actual miracle.
Really?
Oh yeah, it was a monetary miracle. I was coming out of a place where I really had no money. I was like on a catering truck in Los Angeles.
Right.
There's a lot of reasons why, but I mean, like, I had a family tragedy and just no one would hire me, and it was like a nightmare. And I'm happy to talk about it because it was so crazy that how you can become how things can change so fast for anyone.
Yeah, no question.
In a second, you know, your life can change. And next thing you know, you go from being an international touring artist to like working on a Van Leeuwen ice cream truck, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, yeah.
So,
That can happen to anybody, too. No one is impervious to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I guess.
People.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. Right. No, but I mean, like, maybe in the world that we work in,
yeah.
too, where, yeah, it's hard to keep things going, especially because, you know, you're kind of, you know, you do a lot of it on your own, too, you know?
Yeah. It's true. And I found myself in this position, yeah, where there just wasn't the money. And then there was an actual miracle. Just some money came through that was totally unexpected from old music that I'd made.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, I'm getting out of L.A. I'm going to make a record. And I'm going to move back to New York. And I did it. I was able to do it.
Nice. How long ago was that?
I guess that was like a year and 4 or 5 months. So
wow,
that's
so
about how long I've been working. Had been working on the record too.
So you did the album there in LA?
I've done this record in so many places because I really did work with what I had. When I didn't have any money, I started doing it in my closet. Like I built out my closet in LA to be a sound, like a little sound booth.
Right, right.
So and I did some of it there. I did some of it on my computer, like with my very crappy setup and. And then when I had a little tiny bit of money, I brought in George Albrecht, who's amazing.
Uh-huh. What's his story?
A great friend of
producer,
mine.
Producer, yeah?
He's a producer. He's amazing. I mean, he's he used to do the Lansing Dryden. I don't know if you know.
No, I don't.
It's a really amazing project. And he's a producer. He did the Last Hammerin record. He's does stuff with Ariel Pink all the time, and he's just a wizard. So,
cool.
I mean, and for me, it was like about time. It was like,
sure.
So he kind of helped me lay out and lay foundations for all of what from, he took my demos and turned them into like what was going to be the foundation of the songs.
Yeah. So you had basically had the whole album like sort of self produced, like the demo version of the album.
Crappy demo versions,
right.
Yeah. But, so he was actually able to bring basses though that were like useful. I mean, usable.
Cool.
And we still did it in my house. He's that good, you know. He's
nice.
a wizard. So, and with those, I was able to come back to New York and just keep working. And I worked with a lot of people. And I feel like this album, there was like 13 versions of every song.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy. And everything was on a shoestring. I really didn't have a budget, so I did all the bass and the drums at Converse.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
Which is not around anymore, but they're great.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
No.
That's
really
amazing.
Sad.
You used it. I mean, yeah, what a great resource, too. And no, you were actually able to use it in a practical sense, too.
Oh, yeah. I knew. I mean, the most expensive thing about making a record is recording good drums in a good studio.
Right.
So they all give you 2 days.
Uh-huh.
Which is 2 whole days, you can do an entire record of the drums.
Yeah.
So
especially if you're proficient, you can knock it out.
Oh, I brought in like ringers. I brought in like Ian Chang played drums on this. I don't know if you know him. He's like sort of incredible. And so we just knocked it out in 2 days and just the drums. And so that was huge. And yeah, I mean that's how I've done this. I've done this thing, and then you know my friend. Yale, who owns Dr. Wu's, he had been incredibly lenient with me with the studio and kind of handed over the keys at some point.
Oh,
so
cool.
I was in there a lot, like alone.
Oh, wow.
Like a lot.
Nice.
So I don't know. I feel like this would have been an incredibly expensive record. If I actually had clocked all the hours and had been in like a studio every day, forget it. Like,
yeah, were the last two records, like, they were done very differently, right?
Like, all differently. Like, the last one was just me and Michael Cheever in a studio, like, by ourselves. Just me and him, like, the whole thing. And then the one before that, it was more piecemeal also. It was more similar to the way I made this one, where I just worked with what I could and a lot of different people playing on it. And
yeah, it's amazing that you were able to, it seemed like there was, at some point, you might not, like, did you feel like you might not have been able to do a record? Like, it would have just, you'd just been going down a different path kind of slowly, it seemed like, when you went to LA, right?
Apparently, I say every time after I make a record, I didn't realize this, but anytime anyone interviews me after I make a record, I say, I think that's it.
Right.
I think I'm done.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to make another one. Right. I think I'm done. Which is very dramatic.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, I'm not even going to say that. I think I thought I wasn't, but then I always do.
Yeah.
And I really had motivation for this one because I was like, "Oh my God, I can't be on an ice cream truck. Like, I'm not a ice cream scooper."
No. And it's interesting how much when you find your life in any kind of place like that, when you're like, "Yeah, like, it's not desperation, but when you're in a place where it's like, I can't see my life going in this way, like I have to steer this ship back to like where I belong to be." Or when there's something drastic that happens, you know, and financial shit. I mean, I deal with that all the time just because I'm self-employed. I mean, most of my work is for commission. So like, there's definitely moments when it's like, I'm like really broke. I'm actually genuinely broke. And, I'm going to go to the farmer's market with like this bag of change because I know I can at least like get like an apple and like a little zucchini and it's like $1 and like I'll make it until that. I got a check coming in like 2 weeks. So this shit like that where you start getting hyper creative, you know, because.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have no idea. I mean, LA was crazy. Me and my family at one point were making furniture, which you see here actually.
Bench?
Yeah, of the bench, the table, I have a lot of the tops and not the bottoms now, but.
Oh, awesome.
That thing, that's right there. Like, we were selling.
Great tabletops and
And the ironworking too, everything. But we were this and selling it at the flea markets on the weekends.
Wow.
I mean, talk about getting creative. So, you know. All that aside, and there's so much more to the story. It was just so insane.
Tell me more if you can.
What happened? My family just had like a really bad tragedy where they were living in Mexico. They were they lost their house.
Oh, that's terrible.
So, I mean, I don't know if you remember. I did have GoFundMe. It was really.
I didn't remember.
Yeah, I did. I mean, and I so like I can't even fathom. I'm not the kind of person that like wants to ask anyone for anything, of course, let alone like charity or something. Right. But it was like that kind of a situation where it was like, my family is semi-homeless. Mm. Oh, yeah. It was really crazy. I'm surprised you didn't see it. You know, like all of Franz Ferdinand gave me money. John Norris. It was really weird. I mean, it was very like sweet.
That's amazing, though.
It was amazing, but it was like, it was awful. It was just really awful. I mean, hence, like, just there was just no money, so.
This is just a few years ago, too, right?
This was I mean, I guess it was probably 2 years ago or something now.
Yeah.
So, they're all fine now. Everything's fine.
And they have a place?
They have a house. Yeah, my brother has a little one-bedroom in Mexico, and, it was really crazy. Like, their house was attacked by thugs, I guess you would call it.
Really?
Yeah, that just, like, stole everything they own, and they destroyed the house, and, like, poured concrete over the wires. Like, there was no electricity. Like, they had to leave. It was, like, there was no place for them to go.
This was in Mexico, too. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, my God.
So, yeah, I mean, it was just, like, a really crazy... I mean, it sounds like a movie. It doesn't sound real. It doesn't sound like this kind of...
unbelievable.
Yeah, it doesn't... Like, this kind of stuff doesn't, like, doesn't sound real. But, so, yeah, I mean, that was, like, the situation, and it was really devastating for me to have to do the GoFundMe thing too. Like I can't believe that had to happen, but it did.
Well, and listen, got like, out of hot water. I mean, that's, and it got you over that period of time, and you can move on. And that's kind of
got them over, not me. I was on the truck still.
Yeah, right. yeah but what you did was a great thing to help them. Yeah. To help your family, you know.
No regrets about that. I really did what I had to do, and I'm totally fine with it, and I would do it again in a second. I really would.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, listen, I did the GoFundMe too when my, when my kidneys failed and I got out of the hospital and I no longer had the job that I had before I went in, and I had no source of income, and I had, a vast amount of bills, which I will continue to have because I'm on meds for the rest of my life because of my transplant.
I remember this.
Yeah, and I was... like, I had a friend that basically talked me into it. It wasn't, like, something I wanted to do at all.
My friend also was like, you have to do this.
Yeah, I mean, putting yourself out there like that in a way where you are don't want it to be perceived as though you're asking for a handout, if you will, or that you need this charity. But I can tell you right now that that GoFundMe totally saved my life. But,
right.
And I don't doubt that it did something very similar for your family, too, I would certainly think.
Oh, definitely. I really don't know. There was literally no other option.
It's like an emergency.
It is a real emergency, which is why to this day, like, I just had my amp stolen out of my van.
Yeah, I saw that. I just saw that recently. What happened with that?
Someone with a very powerful crowbar... I mean, the amps were in a lockbox in midday, in transit. It was like I just had them. I was just gonna bring them up to my apartment, and they were in. They were locked in with three big locks into a lockbox.
Okay.
And
in a van or something.
In my van, in the back of my van, which I've never had problems with this lockbox. I've taken it on tour. It's always been fine. Someone just had a very powerful crowbar and broke my window and managed to get the locks, break the locks off, and they took my amps.
Damn.
In about 10 minutes at noon.
Holy
shit.
In
front of my house. So it was...
So they had been watching you or something.
Or they saw... I don't know, because it wasn't obvious. Yeah. Right. I mean, they must have been. So, yeah, I don't
know. That's so fucked.
It's really fucked. But I would never... I would never do a GoFundMe for that. I just wouldn't. I get it when bands do it, but like I just...
Yes, because that has happened. Yeah, I've seen that. Yes. Yeah, that's a tough call.
It is a tough call. I mean, this is just for me personally.
If I get it.
Do it and they want to do it, like, I totally support you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I just think after, like, I don't know.
That's a risk of being a touring musician, because that stuff just happens and it's pretty, like, it's a pretty regular occurrence if you really think about it. But that totally sucks. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
It's okay. There's...
Because that was just a few months ago, right?
It's like, yeah, like a month and a half or something.
And pedals, too, and shit, though, too.
My pedals, which I've now replaced. And I got one of the amps. One of the amps is a little too expensive. But also, these amps that I had were kind of monsters.
Were they?
Yeah. I feel like we're now in, like, the age where, I don't know, you need to schlep around giant amps at this point. It's like,
yeah, and who steals amps in the middle of the day too? It's like,
it's crazy. I'm like, there must have been a team. I don't understand. It was a JC120 and a Deluxe Reverb. And
yeah,
like,
those are heavy as shit.
Yes, and it was just, there must have been like three of them. I can't.
And what's even the resale value of that? I mean, it can't be too high, right? Like, I don't even know, but
It could be good, but like, how? I mean, maybe it's sitting on eBay somewhere. I don't.
Maybe, yeah.
The whole thing is just,
yeah, that's
crappy.
Bullshit. I'm so sorry that you had to
do that. Okay. There's some lesson in it, I'm sure.
Yeah, somewhere.
Something.
Yeah. Now, we got to take our lumps, you know, in life and shit. It's just bullshit half the time, too, you know. But that, hopefully that informs the music and...
I mean, it does. And like, we're talking about all this dark shit, but, like, to be honest with you, like, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Now. Like, I can't believe that I did what I said I was going to do.
Yeah, you accomplished it.
I did it. I have an incredible house in Brooklyn. I have, like, an amazing dog. I have, like, all my friends. Like, I made a freaking record, which, like, all odds were against me. Like, all odds were against me.
Yeah, it sounds like it for sure.
So, to me, I know it sounds really hokey, but, like, I'm almost grateful for the experience. Right. Because I have a lot of gratitude. I'm so much gratitude now. Like,
yeah. You have to
impenetrable gratitude.
No, and no one can take that from you. And those hard experiences, you know, they stick with you too. When you need a reminder, you can always remember what you just went through. That's crazy. And you have like, you know, you're going back out on the road, too, which is kind of...
Oh, yeah, I never thought I would be on tour again.
Yeah, definitely, because it's been a couple years,
it's
right?
It's been 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, about 3 years.
That's amazing.
I know, I'm really excited. I'm nervous about a headlining tour, but I mean...
But you've never been super stoked on, like, totally, like, being out, putting yourself out there, right?
No, I love to.
You do?
I love touring. It's just... It's hard to tour. I mean, like, you have to have everything lined up. It has to, the climate has to be right. I mean, there has also has to be people to come see you. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I am nervous about a headlining tour. I'm not going to lie about that because.
But it's been a minute, so you have some. It's good because people haven't had a chance to see you in a while.
You never know. Right. If I could just support Franz Ferdinand for the rest of my life, I would do that job.
Yeah, there's something to be said about doing those because it's, you know, it's the pressure's off too.
I hate, that's what I don't like. I don't like the being the main act. Like, I like to be the supporting guy. So
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, some people like it the other way though. They want all that attention and the spotlight and all that on them, but. Yeah, I mean, I'm just stoked that, one, that you made a really great record that I think is genuinely good and well-made and sounds cool, and that you have the privilege to go back out and, like, people can see it, because,
And I do have the best band I've ever had right now.
Nice,
like,
yes.
Hands down. So there's my bandmates, not only in personality, but they're great, great players. And
cool.
I'm really proud of them. I have Jamie. Jamie has been my drummer in New York before.
Oh, cool.
Jamie Ingalls. He plays with a bunch of people. He used to play with Chairlift and.
So you have some seasoned players with you.
I really do.
Legit people.
Legit.
Cool.
Musicians. Really great.
Yeah, that's what's up. Before we kind of wrap it too, I want to kind of talk to you about. So I saw this video that you put out, or this kind of like a promo bumper video for Trouble,
mm-hmm.
which is the single basically, right? That's like the first.
There's no single. I don't know why we decided to release that one first, but we did.
Yeah, it's cool. I like that song, but I'm kind of more fascinated with that video too in a different way because you have like this UFO hotline on it. So is that a legitimate number? Because I'm not.
It's a number, and it's based out of Roswell, New Mexico. I'm not actually listening to the messages. My friend is, because I don't want to know. I'm scared of what's on there.
It's like a call line.
Fuck you suck, the song sucks, you know, who knows what's on there.
Oh, I doubt there's any message.
But I know that there's been a lot of messages, so yeah, the good ones we're gonna keep and put on my podcast that I'm starting with my friend Juan.
Sweet.
Called Weird Night with Juan and Frankie, and it's like a paranormal podcast. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I want. So have you had obviously you're a fan of that world, but have you ever had any kind of like paranormal experiences in your life? Really? Yeah. No. Well, hopefully that's will invite
really
it into
annoying.
Your life.
Yeah. I really want to see a UFO or a ghost or something, but no, I haven't had nothing like that happen to me.
I had I have one experience of that as a child when I was. There's two different kind of things in my childhood home, which my father still lives in, and in Blacksburg, Virginia, where in my bedroom, two different times I saw...
Virginia's haunted, I tell you.
This is kind of like in the cut, too, in the Appalachian Mountains. And I saw I felt as though I had an encounter at night very close to my window. It was like a bright light from above that wasn't from the street or anything like that, and then shortly thereafter there was a hovering craft.
Oh, we're
like,
talking about aliens here.
Yeah, I'm talking about like a UFO experience. But then again, as a, you know, a child has a, you know, obviously has a very active imagination too, but I felt very much in that.
Abductee.
Maybe. I don't know, because it...
You should do some hypnosis.
I would love to know, because it's definitely stuck with me since childhood. I was probably all of 9 or 10 or something like that.
You might even be a hybrid alien. You might be part alien.
That explains some parts of my life, for sure. But I was watching a lot of Unsolved Mysteries, too.
Oh, okay.
So I feel, I don't know if it was like a self-imposed like abduction somehow. But there's a lot of great extraterrestrial experiences on Unsolved Mysteries, too. Which are all, they re-released a bunch of them.
I remember that when I was a kid. I
love that show.
Yeah, I remember, like, I love the theme song. The theme song is amazing.
It's addictive. it's incredible. Yeah, well, I want to tune into that. So, you guys are in pre-production right now of it, or
we just finished our first episode.
So awesome!
I think the musical guest is going to be Hima. But I'm not totally sure.
Nice.
We got a list.
Yeah, and you're talking about like popular stories, or what's the like when you're talking about the, like paranormal experiences and stuff.
They're
like
all going to be different. Like we're going to do. We're gonna run the gamut, like.
Cool.
But their first episode is we have an interview with these two women that live in Peru that speak to aliens, and they speak alien language.
Whoa.
And it sounds really corny. The way I'm saying it, but they are so they're actually really amazing. The whole, talking to them, they're so on the level. They're just amazing, amazing people. The interview is so great. Like,
oh, I can't wait. Not, so we'll be guests like of that ilk.
Yeah, like that, or, you know, I want to do a life after death episode soon. I have to find somebody who has had one.
Yeah, I feel like once you start opening yourself up to that world, they'll be coming
they'll
to you
come
before
to me.
You know it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll have your pick of the litter for sure. Well, dope. I'm going to check that out, and I'm so excited about the record, too. And I'm just so grateful that we could... chat for a little bit.
Me too. I feel so lucky that anyone wants to ask me questions at all.
Oh,
great.
Please. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Nice. That was awesome. That was something else. And I just want to thank Frankie Rose for her time and generosity in doing the podcast with me. Definitely find that album, Cage Tropical, which comes out August 11th on Slumberland Records. Great record label that I've always admired. And definitely look at those tour dates, because she's doing a full national U.S. tour and then an extensive UK and European tour all through the fall. And you can get that at frankierose.info. Oh yeah, and her podcast too. Check it out. Weird Night with Juan and Frankie. As far as the house list goes, every episode is edited and engineered by CJ Stewart. I want to thank him. He does it as a labor of love. I do it as a labor of love for you. My trip to California, which I'll be on by the time this thing posts, is all self-funded and done just for you guys to check out. I try to talk to a range of different people in music, both artists and industry and whomever, really. Whomever you would find on any given house list at any given venue or club, that's the type of shit I'm on. You know what I'm saying? You can find us on Twitter at HouselessPod. If this was your first time listening, I definitely appreciate it. Please subscribe on iTunes And if you prefer to listen to podcasts on SoundCloud, it's at The Houseless Podcast on SoundCloud. Feel free to repost it, retweet it if you can. If you have a blog or a website or like a mailing list or anything like that, just help me get the word out. That's all I ask. I love being able to spread this around for folks who are into them. And what else can I say? I'm going to end the show on a track from another album of Frankie's, just a snippet of it that I love, from Interstellar, which is a really great record. And that's also on Slumberland, which I highly suggest looking out for. This is the title track off that. So when Cage Tropical comes out on August 11th, get that, get the other record, and go see the tour, all right? What else can I say? Listen, I also have a record coming out on my label too, Prince Paul Instrumental, shipping in September, so get a pre-order right now. Find it online. I would appreciate it if you guys are a fan of Prince Paul and me and the podcast. Thank you guys so much. Until next time, see you guys later.